everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Teal Time with David Teal. I'm Jonathan Heater, along with David Teal. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're slumming it today, huh?
Yeah, recording an old phone after all these high-tech weeks of using microphones and machines. Now we're just recording on an old cell phone. So if the sound quality is a little less than you're expected to, we apologize. We'll be back to normal next week.
Hope so.
So if I was going to ask you maybe one or two words that come to your mind when you think of the Super Bowl or what we just saw this weekend, what would be the word that you would think of?
You know, I didn't watch a whole lot of it because, number one, I had an interview to do.
Yeah.
So I was at my brother-in-law's Super Bowl party, and I excused myself and went upstairs for like a 30-minute interview. And then I came down, it was 3-0 at halftime. And then we left the party so we could get our 7-year-old to bed to go to school the next day. FYI, the Super Bowl should be on Saturday. So people don't have to go to work and school the next day. And they can go to late church if that's their preference. But then I had to get her to bed. So I saw the Patriots touchdown. And that was about it. And then I came downstairs after the little one fell asleep. My wife said, you didn't miss a thing.
So boring would be a good word, maybe?
If you're into offense, yeah.
Slow?
Yeah, slow.
All right. Well, there was a method behind my madness of asking this question. Because we got a lot to talk about. We'll get to football and signing day in a minute. But if I was going to use the word slow or boring or anemic, I think all those words could be used to describe NC State's output on the basketball court against Virginia Tech the other day. Virginia Tech wasn't exactly lighting the hoop on fire, but we had pointed that to that game as a very important game for Virginia Tech. You know, they didn't have Justin Robinson, and they were going on the road, and what they got was one of the worst, if not the worst, offensive performance we've ever seen from an ACC team.
Especially in the shot clock era. No, it's preposterous what happened. And I was not there, Norm was, bless his heart. And apparently most of the shots were wide slam open. I mean, Braxton Beverly, who had hit the game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer to beat Clemson 2 games previous, went 0-for-12. And then last night, State turns around and loses to North Carolina, what was it, 113-97, and Braxton Beverly made 4 or 5 threes. So it's nuts.
I was watching Carolina on Saturday. I don't remember who they were playing, but I heard the score. And I thought, that can't be right. Like, 20 what? There's no way. And lo and behold, you know, I mean, if Virginia Tech, you told Buzz they're going to go down there and score 47.
Yeah, he said
they're going to lose by 20.
They're going to get run, yeah. I mean, NC State was averaging 84 points a game. But you can't overstate how huge that win was for the Hokies without Justin Robinson, especially in light of what happened 2 days later in Blacksburg, where they lose to Louisville. That's going to be more, if Justin Robinson is long-term, and I'm not breaking news here, it's going to be a real struggle for them on the offensive end. And Buzz has shown an incredible knack for reinventing his team on the fly in the wake of injuries and personnel issues. But this is by far his greatest challenge.
If we're looking at weighing wins and losses, does the NC State win matter more to Tech's resume for the tournament than the Louisville loss?
It depends on where those teams end up in the final rankings and how those wins are judged. But Bernard Muir, the Stanford athletic director, and the chairman of the selection committee had a teleconference with some of us yesterday. And he stressed, as most of his predecessors have as chairman, that winning on the road is paramount. You've got to show an ability to do that. And now Virginia Tech has what? 3 ACC road wins? Georgia Tech, NC State, and I'm missing one somewhere.
Well, NC State's a good one.
Yeah.
Right now, I mean, they're slumping 4-6 in league play, the Wolfpack. So, I mean, they have to rebound a little, because if NC State doesn't, then that win's not...
They won. Yeah, where did they win?
Boston College, Pitt.
I can't remember where they won.
If NC State doesn't turn things around, then that win's not going to be that important, right?
No, NC State's got some work to do. They got to figure some things out. Yeah, the Hokies won at Miami in the game.
That's
Justin
right,
Robinson
that's
got
right.
hurt.
But, I mean, NC State's lost 3 in a row to quality opponents. I mean, it was Virginia, North Carolina, were the sandwich bread, with Tech being in the middle of that.
But they're sitting there, they're 4-6 in the league.
They are. They have Pitt coming up mm-hmm. on the road.
And
they
Pitt,
host Syracuse, and then they're at Duke.
Yeah, and Pitt appears to have hit the wall.
Yeah, which we thought would happen.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens with a young team.
But you've got Pitt, Syracuse at home. You better win that one.
Yeah.
You got Boston College and Wake at home.
Yeah.
So they're winnable games for their next five.
Yeah.
Duke's going to be, they're going to need a heck of an effort there.
Yeah. And as much as we'll talk in the next few minutes about Duke UVA on Saturday, the more important game, just in terms of tournament bids and such, Virginia Tech at Clemson on Saturday is large.
Well, I've been shoveling dirt on Clemson for a while, and they've bounced back a little bit. Now they've beaten three of the five or six worst teams in the league.
Correct. This is a chance for them to get a Q1 quadrant one win
at Little John.
Yes, but they need it desperately.
So, they have Virginia Tech coming up. They're at Miami, at Louisville, Florida State.
Sure.
Miami is winnable, and Boston College and Pitt afterwards. But those other games, you're going to probably want to win a couple of those.
Yeah, the Noles are playing better. They went to Syracuse and won. So, yeah, it's going to be a slog for Coach Brownell's bunch.
Well, they and NC State are clearly the two that are most trouble, right? Florida State would need quite a nosedive.
Yeah, they're going to be fine, and I think the Hokies will be fine. But what's hard for Virginia Tech, and what they discovered in that turnaround from NC State to that Saturday Monday thing, when your roster is so depleted, that's hard now. That's really hard. And they've got to do it again in 2 weeks when they play UVA on Big Monday.
So right now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams have 2 or fewer losses at home. I know the home court advantage is big in the ACC, but it seems like it's been even more overwhelming this year than it was last year. Have you noticed any trend?
Not really.
That's been different.
I haven't crunched the numbers that much.
The Carrier Dome has been the Cues are the one team in the top group that haven't been as sharp at home. They're actually 5-1 on the road in league play, but 11-4 at home. So
Syracuse 4-2 at home.
Overall, sorry.
Yeah, after losing last night to Florida State.
Overall, and not counting league play. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Overall.
Okay, but you look at Virginia, Duke, Carolina, and Louisville, and they're a combined 8-13, 17-2 at home in league play.
Yeah, it's strong.
Very.
And that, I mean, I know that the top, I mean, Cameron's never going to be, if Duke loses twice in Cameron in an ACC season, you're surprised, right?
Yeah.
Carolina probably is not going to lose more than 2 or 3 at home. It's just always been the case. I mean, I know you could find some of the years where Kay didn't coach, but I mean, how many years has Duke ever lost 3 home games in league play? Not a lot.
I misspoke. Those 4 teams, Virginia, Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, are 17-1 on the road in league play.
At home, they're just as impressive, right?
Well, Duke and Carolina and Louisville have all lost at home. Virginia has not.
So it's 17-3, 18-3, something like that.
Yeah.
All right, so this week, so Virginia's won 4 in a row, Duke's won 6 in a row, Carolina's won 6 in a row. Clearly separation there, as you thought there would be.
Yep.
Duke and Virginia play
round 2
Saturday. First game was pretty electric.
72-70.
You got a chance to see those freshmen in action with the exception of one. Mm-hmm. And he's back.
He is. Trey Jones.
And the Blue Devils have won six in a row. I don't think that dates back to... I mean, that predates his return, right? He hasn't been back for six games.
No.
Because Virginia's been in the last six they've mm-hmm. played.
Yes.
But in their last few, looking at the scores, they blew out Boston College. No surprise. They blew out St. John's. Blew out Notre Dame. They beat Georgia Tech by double digits, but it wasn't as significant a margin as you may have thought. And they beat Pitt pretty good in their last five since their win against UVA. They haven't played a tough schedule since UVA. They've had five games that they should have won by absolutely. Double digits.
You thought that Duke was not going to lose between the two Virginia games, and sure enough, that has been the case.
I don't know how much you've got a chance to watch them since Jones has been back, but do you feel like he's picked up where he's left off?
Yeah, he's a little sloppier with the ball. He's had more turnovers, but his defense is terrific. And you know, watching, you know, Tony Bennett's had a week now to get ready. This is their bye, and I think you give him and his staff that kind of time, they'll come up with something. Now, whether it works against that group, it was interesting on the ACC call Monday. I asked Bennett about Williamson and also Barrett because they were the first tandem to go for 25 plus against UVA during the Bennett era. And he referenced when he was at Washington State playing against Russell Westbrook at UCLA and James Harden at Arizona State. And he said those guys weren't surrounded by the talent that Williamson is. Even though Westbrook had Kevin Love and Darren Collison and that team went to back-to-back Final Fours.
I also don't think they were as fully formed. Harden was a really good scorer in college, but he even when he went to the pros took a little while to become what he is. Westbrook too, I mean Westbrook was pretty good coming out, but he was a project.
Yeah, his freshman year he was a non-factor.
Yeah, he was a guy that that projected well, his athleticism, and he would grow into what he became. But Barrett and Williamson are guys, I mean Williamson's he's going to get into the mix next year in the All-Star voting because he's such a fan-friendly player. He'll be probably in the dunk contest on Saturday night next year. Barrett's going to be a guy who's going to come in and you're going to expect him to score double digits his first year in the league.
Absolutely.
Both of them. So it's a little different. Now, Duke's Saturday and North Carolina's Monday night, right?
Yep. Carolina on the road.
Right. As tough a two-game stretch as you could possibly have. They're the two of the three best teams and you're playing them.
Right.
And you're the third best team.
Yeah.
Or you're the other team in that mix.
And they're two of the top 10 teams in the country.
And both legitimate national championship threats.
Absolutely.
If you lose both, do you start? Does your number one seed come into question?
Maybe, depend on how the rest of it falls. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned the seedings because the committee is going to come out with its preliminary seedings Saturday morning. Well, Saturday afternoon, 12:30 on CBS, leading into CBS's SEC game. I think it's Kentucky, Mississippi State, maybe. But UVA and Duke will be two of the four number ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but there's also plenty of other contenders for the other number one spots. You got Gonzaga, you got Carolina, you got Tennessee, you've got Kentucky. Plenty of teams. So yeah, you drop a few, and sure, that number one seed could be lost.
By contrast, I know this has never happened before, but if these teams trade off a couple wins and losses down the stretch, is there a way that the ACC could have three number one seeds?
I'd be very surprised. It's never happened.
It would have to take some falling apart by some other teams.
Yeah.
I mean, Tennessee seems pretty strong, and the SEC, while it's deeper than it has been, isn't top heavy. I don't think. I mean, they're good.
Kentucky's pretty good. Tennessee and LSU.
But the middle pack is large, and they're all pretty similar. And then Gonzaga, I mean, if they hold court, in their league, they play in the weakest league of all the contenders, they're going to be a one seed. Yeah. But a loss to them is much more devastating to their hopes of being a one seed than it would be anybody else, right?
Yeah, it's much less wiggle room.
Outside of San Francisco, that league isn't very good. I mean, maybe St. Mary's bounces back, but right now San Francisco's, I think, the clear number two in that league. Mm-hmm. And Gonzaga beat them by double digits the first time they played. At what point do you start? Is Saturday your first time to really start looking at how seeding may play out?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see, because the committee will seed 1 through 16. That's what they'll announce. And they'll place them in regions, and this is the third year they've done it. It's a complete ripoff of what the college football playoff does. But they only do it once prior to Selection Sunday. And actually, they've been very accurate. The first year, 15 of the 16 remained in the top 16 on Selection Sunday, and 3 of the 4 number ones.
Yeah.
And last year, 13 of the top 16 and 3 of the 4 number ones. Now, the one caveat is, the first 2 years they did this, there was only 4 weeks of the regular season remaining. This time there's 5 weeks. So I think it may be a little more fluid this go around with the preliminary season.
Just taking a quick look at Joe Lenardi's bracketology on ESPN, he has no ACC teams on the bubble. So Clemson's out for him. He's not in their first four out or their next four out. They're completely out. All the other 8 ACC schools are in without being, on the bubble. I think who would be the weakest probably would be Florida State or NC State.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had NC State at like a 9 seed. So super safe in. But Clemson, like you said, has some important work to do. And there's a big example of that going to be this weekend.
Yep.
Virginia Tech is probably in that mix. They're probably going to come out as a top 4 seed Saturday, right?
I would think so.
They're as a 4.
Yeah, and Virginia Tech's never been a top 4 seed.
The best is their 5 is a 5?
5 seed in 19... Well, no. I think they were a 5 seed in 2007, which is the last time they advanced in the tournament. That was under Seth Greenberg.
And were they a 5 seed during Dale Curry's years?
No.
They were always a lower seed?
Mm-hmm.
What are you expecting out of that game?
Virginia Tech Clemson?
Yeah.
I think Clemson's more desperate. I think Clemson's going to win. And, Elijah Thomas is playing really well. That matchup with Kerry Blackshear is going to be very big for both teams. And, the Hokies can't afford to get in foul trouble. Buzz Williams has been very cryptic about both Justin Robinson and P.J. Horn, just saying indefinitely. But, man, you just get the sense in listening to him talk about it that it's going to be later rather than sooner for those two young men coming back.
Well, the game against NC State, I mean, obviously they're helped tremendously by really bad shooting, right? By NC State. And you said that you don't even know if it was bad shot selection. Shots just weren't dropping.
Yeah.
So that can really age you when you're undermanned, when a team's only going to put up 24. Yeah. At Louisville, they scored 64. Which is well under their season average, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Clemson is a team that I don't think they've been overwhelmingly strong on defense this year. They're probably a middle of the road defense.
Yeah, they'll grind you. They're physical, and they're experienced. Marquise Reed is an all ACC mm-hmm. player. I mentioned Thomas earlier. I think Clemson is going to win.
Well, Virginia Tech's down to essentially 6 players, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and Hill and Alexander Walker and Blackshear, if he could stay out of foul trouble, are playing the whole game. Okay. Outlaw, too, right?
Huge minutes.
Yeah, I mean, in Beattie, you're not going to get a whole lot. Most nights, you're not going to get a ton of offense.
No.
But you have to have him out there for defensive purposes
mm-hmm.
for the whole game. And so, at some point, that's going to run these guys down, right?
No, it's going to be hard.
I mean, he only played 7 against North Carolina State. Yeah.
And people may look to previous seasons where Jim Boeheim was playing a bunch of guys 38, 39 minutes a game. Huge difference. They're playing 2-3 zone in the half court.
It's a lot slower game.
Yeah. Buzz wants to get after you a little bit defensively, and that'll sap your legs quicker than anything.
Has that adjusted at all, or has he still tried to play at that same pace?
Well, he had to the other night against Louisville because they got behind.
Yeah. Kabanga played 1 minute.
Yeah.
So six guys.
Yeah.
And then, so basically, whoever's in foul trouble is going to be where Wilkins is coming in and out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if Blackshear's in foul trouble, they are unbelievably small.
Small. I mean, they were unbelievably small before P.J. Horn went there. Not like P.J. Horn's very big.
No.
He's 6'5", 6'6", on a good day.
No. And Blackshear, offensively, is not exactly, you know.
He has his moments. He was good the other night.
Well, he's not nailing himself down in the post. I mean, he's got a shot.
Mm-hmm.
He's got range.
Yeah, he sure does.
But, yeah, I mean, that they're playing it. I know they're well in this bracket right now, and they're right around the top 10, and they're going to be a top 4 seed. But they're
going to be a top 4 seed on Saturday.
Yes, but their future is a lot more tenuous than all of the numbers tell you.
Yes,
because of the injuries.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, if it's not a sooner rather than later, there's you're one injury away, you're foul trouble away from real trouble.
Well, and that's what Mike Bray was telling us on the ACC call Monday. And if anybody knows what it's like to play with a depleted roster the last 2 years, it's Coach Bray at Notre Dame. And he said where it really affects you is practice.
Yeah.
He said you're terrified of getting somebody else hurt. So you really got to dial it back. He said he was using one of his assistant coaches in practice just to be the 10th guy.
Yeah. Do you I'm not as versed deep into the Tech roster, but do you get the sense that he's going to have to, even just to steal some minutes or fouls, he's going to have to play some more guys?
I don't think that's an option.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating
next
few weeks for them if they don't get Robinson or Horn back.
Yep.
And I mean, Horn's 6'5", and he's their second biggest post player, right?
Yeah. And on the flip side, I expect Ty Jerome to play on Saturday against Duke. I mean, and nobody's whispering in my ear, but I just got the sense that holding him out against Miami was precautionary.
He's an NBA draft.net. He's sneaking into the bottom of the first round on their projected first round draft.
I believe this is Ty Jerome's last season in Virginia.
Well, we know. Well, we don't know. We all assume Hunter's gone.
Yes, we do.
Because he's going to be a lottery pick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's ever been a year where Tech and Virginia both had a lottery pick in the same draft, and it seems like Alexander Walker's even more of a lock for a lottery pick than Hunter is. I've seen Alexander Walker up in the top 5 in some projections, which, you know, he's obviously a very talented kid, but it seems like his shot's a little slow. His release is a little slow.
I don't know who I would judge. I don't watch enough NBA and talk to enough NBA scouts to have a good grasp as to which one is the better prospect. My sense just in watching them is they'd be pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, Hunter better defensively.
Yes.
Absolutely. If you can get one of those 3-and-D kind of guys, and Hunter shoots it pretty well.
From everywhere.
You could get him, a guy like that, to play defense. I mean, well, we've seen what Malcolm Brogdon's become. I mean, he's been a guy who's been invaluable, and now he's on a team that's got the number one seed in the East.
How about that?
And, I mean, I know Antetokounmpo takes all of the credit because he's unbelievable. Brogdon's a huge piece of that, right?
Yes, he is.
And there's no reason Hunter – I know Hunter's a different player. Brogdon's more of a point – can play a little point forward.
Hunter is far more –
a wing guy.
Is far more gifted.
Oh, there's no doubt. Now, but you know, as you cover Brogdon.
Yes.
He's as intelligent a basketball player as you're going to come across.
He is among my favorite athletes ever that I've encountered.
Analytical. He understands the game. He's a leader.
Yeah.
He's everything a coach wants.
And he's worldly, and he gets it And, you know, his team, you know, Chris Long, the former UVA football American, was given the NFL Man of the Year award at the Super Bowl the other day for his work in bringing clean water to East Africa. And who's one of his primary partners in that effort? Malcolm Broughton.
Yes, well, Chris Long is a good person for anyone to look up to.
Yeah, and so is Malcolm.
He's a dynamite human being, both of them. What else are you looking forward to or looking towards basketball in the next few days?
Well, just the, you know, the Saturday, Monday turnaround for UVA. And presuming Ty Jerome plays Saturday, does he have any residual, any recurrence of the back, and does that affect him on Monday in Chapel Hill? I mean, that's like playing in the Final Four, where you play Saturday night, and then you're playing Monday night against top five competition. It really is.
It's as good a simulation as you could possibly have.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, right. Like from the day, from what time you're playing at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, and then you got a night game on Monday night. Mm-hmm. The same amount of time between the two.
And the only difference
is travel.
You got to travel.
Also on Saturday, Louisville's got a pretty interesting stretch too.
They're at
Florida State on Saturday, and then they have Duke on Tuesday.
At home, I believe.
Yes. I think we're going to learn a lot more about the Cardinals over that span.
You know, I wasn't real impressed Monday night. And I know Virginia Tech was undefeated at home.
Chris Mack wasn't at halftime. I don't know if you saw any of that interview.
No, I did not.
It was a little hairy.
Well, and if Ryan McMahon doesn't go bat guano crazy for 83 seconds and score 12 points on 4 possessions, Louisville had been in a heap of trouble against the Hokies. But Wilkins fouls him on a three. He makes all three free throws. And then on the next three possessions, bam, 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 including one in transition that was as cold-blooded and as deep and as unconscious as you can imagine. And Paul Brazo, the ACC Senior Associate Commissioner for Basketball, he was at the game, and he texted me. He said he'd have to be certain and go back and watch the tape. He said, I think that dude just scored 12 points without taking a dribble. I mean, everything was catch and shoot, catch and shoot.
Well, here, courtesy of ESPN, here is the sound. I'm going to try to play it. If it doesn't work.
Oh, wow.
Then, you know, we won't hear it.
Coach, what has you so upset right now with the officiating?
I'm worried about my team.
Okay, what's your biggest takeaway in that first half?
Well, I mean, I think Virginia Tech shoots the ball at a high level, so we've got to be able to keep guys in front of us, and they can't go drive and kick basketball, which they're as good as any team in the country with their undersized lineup.
What have you seen that's allowed Virginia Tech to get back in this late in that first half?
Well, they're one of the top teams in the country.
Okay. Thank you.
There you go.
Halftime interviews are so uncomfortable.
They are. It depends upon who you have. Yeah. I mean, if you get a media-savvy guy, it can be fun and interesting. Yeah. But if you get someone who's just watched his team play below expectations, it can be really, really, really uncomfortable.
Yeah. I feel for people like Allison Williams who did that interview.
Who does a good job.
She absolutely does.
And all those questions are fair.
Yes.
But it's the same with you watch the NBA games and they do the between-quarter interviews.
They do them during timeouts.
And Popovich, you know, gosh, I mean, no one wants to talk to the media less than him in that situation. And, you know, I am all for, you know, us having the right to ask questions and be answered, but
during competition,
it's tough.
I don't think they bring any insight whatsoever.
Baseball's the only one where it really works, and it's because baseball is such a slower game.
Yeah, and they can do it.
And they're fun. They're a little bit more fun.
Right, and guys are clowning for the camera.
Yeah. And they're, yeah. But anyway, Louisville played 9 guys, and even their two guys that got the least amount of action played 7 and 8 minutes. So they were rotating guys.
They warmed down.
What's Buzz said about this depth on the calls?
He wasn't on the call Monday because they played Monday. But he said after the game, this is our team. We just got to figure it out.
Well, he's hard to argue that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think if what can Louisville, how much is at stake for Louisville over the next 5 days? Are they playing with house money?
Yeah. I think a lot of people consider Chris Mack among the contenders for ACC Coach of the Year.
And if you're ACC Coach of the Year, you're in the discussion for National Coach of the Year, right?
Could be. I'm not saying he's a lock. I think Buzz is in the conversation. I think Tony Bennett's in the conversation. I think Krzyzewski's in the conversation.
I think what's going to hurt Coach K from the layman's perspective is they lost at all with that team.
It always does.
And I think Buzz, if they can weather this, he's got a damn good argument.
Yes.
Because no one is, outside of Mike Bray maybe, is dealing with more issues from personnel perspective than Buzz.
Yeah. I was crunching some numbers the other day, and I don't have them in front of me, so I can't give them to you precisely. But in the same 2-week period, 5 years ago, Buzz Williams, Danny Manning, and Jim Christian were hired as ACC head coaches by Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, and Boston College. You tell me who got the better of that deal. Buzz Williams has won more ACC games than Danny Manning and Jim Christian combined.
And
by the way, took over a program in more dire straits and with less basketball heritage than Boston College and Wake Forest.
Well, right. Like, at the time, you would have admitted freely that Buzz made the most questionable move of the three.
Yes.
I mean, he was at a basketball first university that was good.
Yeah.
And Danny Manning had been kind of on the wheel, not getting a job. He got his first step at a school that has been very good in basketball.
Yeah.
And then got another jump at a school that's been very good at basketball. And for Christian, he wasn't exactly a guy that was breaking down the doors for, power jobs. So to get a shot at Boston College, a place that's been pretty solid over the years. Yeah. I mean, Al Skinner did a pretty good job off and on throughout his tenure.
Wouldn't I like to have him back?
So
at least his record.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, everybody was scratching their heads about Buzz to leave Marquette to come to Virginia Tech. I'm not surprised that he's won because I thought he was a good coach.
We all did.
It was just, why go there? Mm-hmm. That was the question. And he's got a Hokies team hovering around the top 10 in the country, which is pretty unheard of based on their history, right?
It's amazing that in his time there, they have not been whole.
Yeah.
I mean, the run of bad luck they've had with injury and such. I mean, Justin Robinson, and we say this too often, and we in the media, we don't know these young men. We know them to watch them play football or basketball or whatever sport they compete in, and then we occasionally interview them. But he seems, from all appearances, and from no matter who you talk to, Justin Robinson just seems like a quality young man. And this is his last year of college basketball. And Kevin Keats said it on the ACC call. He said, I hate this. I want to see that kid back in uniform. And I think everybody who's reasonable believes the same thing.
If Virginia Tech has all of its ammo.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, they're legitimately threatening to be a top five to eight team in the country.
Oh, if Chris Clark hadn't been essentially booted and if Nolley hadn't been ineligible.
Horn and Robinson. Then you're talking about four off the bench. Man. Four or five off the bench. And then you could play whatever pace you want to play at.
Now, they could have been, for their program, they could have been historically good.
Well, they already have that chance, right? They have that chance this year.
But it's gonna be hard.
Because of the personnel, health and personnel issues. Yeah.
The one thing that breaks their way is the schedule. And you knew this going into the ACC season. It's just the way the schedule rotation works. You know, Virginia Tech's the two teams they play twice that rotated on the schedule, Georgia Tech and Notre Dame.
Yeah, you know.
That helps. That helps a lot.
It's going to sound really stupid, and I don't really care what people think, if I'm dumb or not. But it almost make if Virginia Tech isn't fully healthy, it probably is better for them to go one and out in the ACC tournament.
Yeah.
To not drag themselves through that.
That's not stupid.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. if they are not, like, dwindling down in the 7, 8, 9 seed range, but right. If they feel like they've got a 4 or 5 locked up, why try to run them through the meat grinder of the ACC?
A 3 or 4 game gauntlet? No. I know you want to cut down the nets, and I know you want to hang a banner, and that would be awesome and all that. But that's not – college basketball isn't about the conference tournament.
Nope. And even at their weakened state right now, in a tournament, ACC tournament, they can hang with anybody but the top 3. So it's not beyond conceivable that they could win a couple of games, even with this group in the tournament, but you're just going to wear yourself down even more. And you have to be ready. I mean, the goal going into the season, we knew they were a top 10 caliber team, but you have to win a game. I think you have to get into the second weekend.
But second weekend's winning 2 games. They've only done that once in their history.
But based on what they are,
based on what they are right now, that's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
Not unless Justin Robinson comes back at full bore.
It just depends upon the draw, obviously. If someone gets upset around them, I mean, you know, they could flex themselves into losing too, in a first round. They could be a prime upset team if they're not healthy. Mm-hmm. But I thought going into the season that they definitely needed to win 1 game, and I thought, you know, it was a pretty good chance they could win 2. Now, you know, obviously things have changed because of injuries. But we're going to learn a lot over the next 5 days or so.
It's great. ACC basketball is just, you know, I've had Saturday and Monday circle on the calendar since the schedule came out. I mean, that's going to be great stuff. And then the rematch in Blacksburg for Tech and UVA a week after that. That'll be very interesting.
And we'll be, you know, getting closer to the tournament before we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump over to football.
Sure. Signing day?
I guess we can call it signing day. I don't even know what we call these now. But yesterday, Wednesday, we're recording this on Thursday, was the
traditional
first Wednesday in February signing day. Although most teams have most of their work done in the fall, Virginia Tech is a little different because of all the transfers and attrition they've had.
Yeah.
I know they pulled a quarterback out of Rome, Georgia, right? That was kind of...
Knox Kadem had committed to James Madison.
Yeah. To call him below the radar for most recruiting fans is probably fair.
Yeah.
But what... I know they pulled a big recruit from Ohio State yesterday.
Yes, Doug Nestor, who's a big old guard from West Virginia. And he's the highest rated player in the Hokies class. And apparently one of the highest rated offensive linemen, maybe the highest rated that they've ever signed. And it's a big get. And Justin Fuente, Norm and I were at his presser yesterday, and he just raved about Vance Weiss, his offensive line coach, and the recruiting job that he did on Nestor. And Nestor apparently has told media and family and friends, you know, out in West Virginia and such, that he was literally 2 days from enrolling at Ohio State when word broke that Urban Meyer was going to retire. And that's what he had been down to Ohio State and Virginia Tech. There was, you know, a previous relationship, and he reconsidered.
It surprises me. Ohio State lost a few guys late in the game. They lost a quarterback to Georgia. I mean, Ryan Day was the coach of that team for two or three games last year. So they're invariably guys would have gone up there for games because on Saturdays there's full of recruits. They would have gotten to know him. He's an in-house guy. He's a young guy, obviously explosive offense. It surprises me that they lost a bunch of guys late in the recruiting cycle.
He doesn't have rings, though.
No, that's true. That's true.
Not as a head coach.
That's true.
Yeah.
So were they pretty pleased with how things went yesterday based on him? Or
well,
did
they lost a linebacker, Asante, from up in Chantilly, lost him to North Carolina yesterday. That had been the real capper. I believe he's a four-star kid. But he chose Mac Brown and the Tar Heels. But Virginia Tech's recruiting class, excuse me, by 247 Sports is ranked 26th nationally.
It's pretty good.
And third in the ACC behind Clemson and Florida State.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Whereas Virginia is 39th and 7th in the ACC.
Which is better than it has been.
Yeah.
Before we get to Virginia, I don't even know if they signed anyone yesterday.
They did. They signed three.
Okay. Before we get to Virginia, I think more interesting to the listeners of this podcast
transfers
is what Fuente had to say addressing the attrition that's happened this offseason.
He was good. I thought it was his most revealing and forthright encounter with the media since he's been at Virginia Tech. And he answered all the questions and talked about, he didn't want to get into some specifics about Josh Jackson and Hendon Hooker, the two quarterbacks who left, nor about Deshaun McLeese, the running back from over at Southside, Oscar Smith High, who was in the transfer portal and then pulled out and is now back in good graces and on scholarship and with the Hokies. But, in essence, my primary takeaway was that winning those first 2 years, winning 19 games, masked a lot of internal issues that you normally associate with a coaching transition. I mean, this is one of the most unusual transitions in college football history. Taking over for a guy who'd been to 23 consecutive bowls and is an icon and a Hall of Famer. And then to go win the Coastal your first year and to give Clemson all it wanted in the ACC championship game before the Tigers went on to the college football playoff. And then to come back and win 9 games in 2017. I think that, appeased some people. Now, 6-7, ripped the scab off. And people are like, maybe this isn't all that it's cracked up to be. I'm not getting as much run as I want. And if I'm not getting run and we're losing games, peace out. And I think that's, in large measure, the way it went down. And Fuente had nothing but good things to say about Josh Jackson. And nothing but good things to say about Hendon Hooker. He was incredibly gracious talking about Trayvon Hill, who he pitched off the team for, in essence, being a knucklehead.
Yeah.
Time after time after time. And Hill has been very critical of Fuente on social media. But that just rings so shallow to me. Because Justin Fuente kept that dude on scholarship so he could graduate and be eligible immediately next season. And oh, by the way, where does it land him? Miami, Virginia Tech's Coastal Division rival. I thought that was pretty stand up of Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente.
You mentioned McLeese coming back. Is there any possibility of other guys pulling themselves back? Did you get this? Do you get the sense? So, in, I guess, connection with all of this, you said he didn't want to talk too much about Jackson and Hooker, but
in terms of their specific, he said every case was individual.
Right. But how much how many questions or how much did he address the upcoming quarterback situation? I mean, I guess it's Ryan Willis's job, whereas it would have been an open job.
I think he made it quite clear that Quincy Patterson is not ready. They think he's got potential, but, and I'm paraphrasing here, Fuente about Quincy Patterson. Let's remember where he came from in high school football. Not Allen High in Texas, where they run 7-on-7 from the time they're in diapers. He's from a Chicago high school that is not accustomed to producing top-shelf college football talent. He has not faced the competition. He doesn't have that background. And it's going to take him some time. So I believe, I mean, right now, barring, and I think they could do some business in the transfer portal for a quarterback. But right now, it's Ryan Willis. There's no doubt, which is what kind of surprises me about Jackson's decision, because I really believe that had he stayed around, I think he'd have won the job.
I do too.
But I guess he wasn't convinced.
Who knows?
Maybe he just thought that he shouldn't have to
compete. I mean, that's going to be...
I got hurt. I shouldn't lose my job because I got hurt.
That's going to be questions that the media should ask wherever he goes.
Yeah.
Why did you leave? And hopefully we'll know. I haven't seen a whole lot of rumors of where he may end up. I know West Virginia was somewhere you had mentioned maybe. Mm-hmm. Thought I saw Iowa.
Really?
But, I mean, who knows?
Well, he's a Midwest kid, Big Ten kid.
Another thing that you talked about in terms of the transfers and guys leaving and picking the scab off, and they had success, and then they had some adversity this year, and guys that may not be getting enough playing time wanted to leave. But I do want to focus some more on the quarterbacks, because that's what everybody cares about and loves to talk about. Do you get the sense that coaches understand that transferring of quarterbacks is going to be a thing now,
more
so than any other position?
Yes. Oh, Fuente was – he said, this is not going to slow down. It's only going to get worse. And the phrase he used was pie in the sky, to think that all four were going to stick around to have a spirited competition in the spring, meaning Willis, Patterson, Hooker, and Jackson. He said – that wasn't going to happen. We knew there was going to be some attrition, I think. And I actually asked him yesterday. I said, you take a straw poll of every reporter, every fan, and maybe every coach on your staff, and we'd all put Hendon Hooker at the top of that list. His transfer surprises nobody. It was the Jackson transfer that I think caught most people off guard.
What do you think? So a lot of coaches like the idea of certainty. Actually, probably all coaches enjoy the certainty of knowing what's coming, planning. You know, I know there are a lot of schools. When I was a kid, Mississippi State was just year after year pulling JUCOs. Like, their whole recruiting class would be JUCOs.
Yeah.
So, which is a little uncertainty, right? Are coaches, do you see coaches becoming more okay with fluidity when it comes to roster management?
They have no choice. That's just the way of the world. With graduate transfers and with the NCAA's, the way it is now more likely to grant waivers even for those athletes who don't graduate. They grant them waivers to be eligible immediately. So people are taking a chance. And a quote from Fuente that I regretted not putting in this morning's column, but you have space limitations and such. But his remark was, you know, at some point, you have to be able to coach them. You have to be able to push them. And in this atmosphere, you risk when you do that, that you lose them.
Do you get the sense that some people are coaching scared because of that?
I don't think he will. Some might. Some might put on the kid gloves. I don't think Fuente will. He's old school now.
Bronco, too, pretty strong.
Oh. Yeah, he's not kid gloving anybody either.
All right, well, that's a good transition to their signing day. Sure. So they signed a few guys.
Yeah, they signed three. Well, and one of them's a quarterback from Germany who committed months ago.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, that was not a big surprise. And I mean, none of them was a surprise. And the big one to my way of thinking is the Penn State graduate transfer, Alex, and I hope I don't butcher his last name, Gellerstedt, but he's a offensive lineman from Penn State, and they need linemen. And so I would anticipate that he would be in the mix to start next season.
How surprised would you be if neither Virginia nor Virginia Tech added guys through the transfer portal or grad transfers going forward?
For next season?
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably be pretty surprised. I think one of them, or if not both.
What about at quarterback?
No, not for Virginia. I think they're set. They like where they are.
But Tech, you think?
I think
it's really interesting to know how active coaches actually are on this. Like, is this full fledged recruiting? Do you go back to how you recruit high school kids, or do you try to find the ones who you had connections with when they were in high school and try to pull those guys?
Let's put it this way. There is nothing preventing a college coach, once a young man is in the transfer portal, a college coach can go to that young man's campus. He can sit in his dorm and pitch him. I don't know if it's happened, but I know this hasn't happened, but if Bronco Mendenhall had been interested in Josh Jackson, he could have driven to Blacksburg, and wherever Jackson lives, I presume it's off campus, he could have just been right there trying to pitch him.
Well, in this world of live streaming, some kid, please do this. If a coach comes and sits in your dorm room, please live stream the recruiting pitch, because I'd love to watch.
Man, wouldn't it be great? It's probably only a matter of time. Well, the coach wouldn't go for it.
Well, you don't have to tell him it's live streamed until he starts getting texts from his assistants.
Correct.
Any coaching fluidity that's going to happen at the schools over the next couple of weeks?
You mean their staffs?
Yeah.
No, I think they're all set.
Barring any kind of scandal.
Yeah, no, there's not going to be a scandal. They're all good.
Anything else of interest to you?
I don't think so. I knew we had a lot on our plate.
We're checking in a little quick, man. Under 55 minutes.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the lo-fi recording device. I can see the ticker, so I'm moving things along. All right, well, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week, probably a little earlier in the week,
yeah,
next week, because we'll have those two Virginia games in the bag, and David will know a little bit more about Virginia, I think, their ability to play some of the top-level teams in some really interesting environments.
Yeah, Virginia only once in its history has won back-to-back games against top 10 opponents.
Well, they got a chance.
Yep. 1976 ACC tournament when they won it all.
It'd be interesting to see how many times they've beaten Duke and Carolina back-to-back. I mean, I know you don't necessarily play. That doesn't – very rarely
very,
that happens.
Does that happen on the schedule, right?
But
very limited opportunity.
I guess that
there
probably –
there aren't many teams that get to play Duke and Carolina,
yeah,
back-to-back. Or certainly who want to play back-to-back.
I don't know that that's much of a reward most years.
I believe the year that Notre Dame won the ACC tournament, I believe they beat Duke and Carolina back-to-back. That's pretty cool for Mike Bray, who grew up in ACC country.
You probably could count on one hand how many times a team has beaten Duke and Carolina back-to-back.
Especially when they were in the top 10.
Yeah, because you're right. It may happen once a year where a team plays those teams back-to-back. So, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on in Charlottesville on Saturday, and then to Chapel Hill on Monday, and we'll regroup
in Charlottesville on Saturday.
That's right. We'll regroup next week. Maybe we'll get another Jay Billis shout out. And we'll regroup next week and go over the action.
Sounds good.